AshevilleFreeMedia, AshevilleFM.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio. This week's episode features a conversation with Greta, an activist who's worked in Calais, France, with the No Borders Network doing immigrant solidarity. Greta tells us about the new squat that the immigrants have opened after multiple waves of arrests and eviction. More info at calaismigrantsolidarity.wordpress.com. Calais is spelled C-A-L-A-I-S. Later, we'll hear a segment from Anarchist Dishes Radio Berlin about the recent conference against unnecessary and imposed megaprojects. The host interviews Bogdan, an activist who's been struggling against a proposed gold mine at Rosia Montana in Romania. More episodes of that show can be found at aradio.blogsport.de. What you say, what you say, what you say,
what? Come like a boss! I think I have a solution to the immigration problem. But before I reveal what the solution is, maybe I should first point out what the immigration problem is. The problem with immigration is that the government's regulated in the first place.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional institution and may be recorded or monitored.
If you think about it, corporations aren't regulated at the border. They can cross all borders and transcend all boundaries. Corporations are multinational. Money also passes freely across borders. Products. There are treaties the size of phone books that were signed in order to liberate products from being regulated at national borders. And we all know that jobs travel across national boundaries all the time. In fact, the only thing regulated at the border is people. That means corporations have more rights than you. So do green pieces of paper with dead slave owners' faces on them. Sneakers and cheese puffs have more rights than you do. Even jobs. That means the machinery we use to toil all day for food rewards can cross a border before we can. The reason for this makes perfect sense if you think about the purpose for national borders existing. Corporations need national borders. Those borders are essential for creating artificial pockets of poverty. Consider the situation on the U.S.-Mexico border, for instance. There you have a situation where you find hungry people on one side of a fence and food on the other. This creates a pool of desperate people, and that serves corporate interests in several ways. First, corporations can use those desperate people as leverage. That is, if workers are dissatisfied with the level of pay or benefits and ask for a reasonable pay raise, the corporate bosses can say, if you don't want to work for the current wage, those poor people will, and the workers are forced to go back to work. This is the strategy that's been used to depress worker wages, so that since the 1970s, the American workers have lost something like 50% of their spending power. No kidding. If it feels like you're getting poorer and poorer, it's because you are. The second advantage corporations have by maintaining national borders is that they can make good on those threats to ship jobs to Mexico, or to ship Mexican jobs to India, or Indian jobs to China. It's called the race to the bottom, and it reduces the vast majority of the human population to slavery, while concentrating wealth and power in fewer hands. Occupy's rhetoric about the 1% isn't really too far off. And as that corporate elite amass all that wealth, they pay off governments to make the playing field even less level, making sure hard work will never set anyone free. None of us at the bottom will ever have the chance to climb the ladder and displace one of the privileged elite at the top. The third advantage that corporations gain from national borders is a steady influx of so-called illegal immigrants. In the U.S., illegals comprise the workforce of entire industries, from fruit harvesting to meat packing. Desperate people, hungry people, cross borders and are willing to work for pennies on the dollar. They represent a class of super exploitables. They perform functions that no one else will perform. Their illegal status keep them vulnerable and disempowered, existing on the fringes and left to the whims of the powerful who can increase their own profit margins at the illegal's expense. If borders simply disappeared overnight, if the fences were all torn down, all those advantages that corporate predators gain from creating artificial pockets of poverty would disappear. The situation in Mexico and the U.S. would equalize, much like the border between the U.S. and Canada. But mega-profit corporations with their money bags and their influence over policymakers will never let that happen. So what I propose is an immigration law compliance day. If we organized all the so-called illegals to turn themselves in at the same time, the entire economy and government control system would collapse. With no one to pick fruit, it would rot in the fields. With no meat packers, fast food joints would run out of burgers. Millions of people would overclog all of the nation's jails and prisons, demanding three meals a day, while food prices soared. To make matters worse, Mexico would refuse to repatriate millions of poor people, fully aware that the flood of millions of poor people would destabilize their country. So the U.S. justice, immigration, and prison complexes would collapse under the burden of millions with nowhere to go, while the nation felt the crunch of a national food crisis.
You have 60 seconds left on this call.
Great timing. Immigration Law Compliance Day. The one situation where obeying the law could bring about the total collapse of civilization as we know it. We can make the whole system grind to a halt. Si se puede. Yes, we can. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swinney from Ohio Supermax Facility. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at Sean Swain, number 243-205, OSP, 878, Coitsville-Hubbard Road, Youngstown, Ohio, 44505. To read some of Sean's writings and learn more about his case, check out seanswain.org. We're speaking with Greta from the No Border Network, currently based in the UK. We're going to be discussing some of the stuff going on in Calais, France. Thanks a lot for giving us the opportunity to have this conversation.
It's a pleasure.
Would you like to introduce yourself and maybe talk about No Borders for a moment?
Yeah, well, my name is Greta and I'm a master in migration studies. So I'm involved with a lot of projects involving migrants, refugees, asylum seekers in the UK. And through a network of activists in Brighton, I got linked to Calais. So I read a lot of things about Calais, and I first decided to go there because I wanted to do my research for my dissertation about how it's impossible to arrive in the UK, and Calais is a good spot to see the injustice at the border of European nations. And I went to Calais, and I was linked to No Border activists there. And activists kind of overtaken my research because in Calais, where there is always a lot to do for an activist. And No Border is a network that is quite spread in Europe, but I think there are some No Borders activists also at the border between Mexico and the United States. Some, I'm not 100% sure, but someone told me that. But it's truly really active in Calais and in Morocco, for the Morocco-Spain border. And they try to support migrants, but they are not an association, so it's not humanitarian action. It's more like supporting action and targeting police violence and try to record mainly police violence at the borders.
Can you talk about Calais a bit? Where is it located for the American audience? Because we get horrible okay. educations in geography. And how does it relate to the struggle of undocumented people who are traversing through Europe?
To give a basic background information, Calais is in France and is one of the ports where the ferry go to England. So it's one of the main points for the trucks from Europe to from mainland Europe to the UK. And so that's the first thing. And then the UK is outside the Schengen area. So that means Schengen area means that in the European Union, people are allowed to freely move from one country to the other. But that doesn't apply to the UK because the UK is out of the Schengen area. So that makes more complicated for migrants to travel from France or from any other European country to the UK. Because while, for example, a migrant, even if undocumented, is not going to be checked at the land border between Italy and France, everybody is checked, European or not, documented or undocumented, is checked at the UK border. So it's virtually impossible to cross to the UK. It's literally impossible to cross legally, and it's quite harsh to cross also illegally because there is really strong controls. Every truck, if there is no traffic jams, is checked and there is like oxygen detector. Every truck is like detected by this device to check if people are literally like breathing inside. And there is dogs sniffing the trucks. So from what came out from like talking with the people in Calais, the only way to actually get across inside the trucks is that there is too many trucks and the police or the UK border is not able to check all of them. People in Calais come from really different countries. So there is communities from Afghanistan, Pakistan, Sudan, Somalia, Eritrea, Syria, and Egypt, Ethiopia. And a lot of people have maybe papers from other European countries, but still they have like leave to remain in Italy or refugee status in Italy that doesn't allow them to go to England, given that England is outside the Schengen area and these documents are not documents that allow them to travel to England. So that's why Calais. People want to go to England for a really different reason. Of course, one of the reasons is that in England is suffering the crisis much less than the other European countries, so it's easier to find a job. But it's also that in England it's easier to find a job if you don't have the right papers, because a lot of people, also people with the right papers, work without any contract. While, for example, Sweden or Germany, where there is jobs, but it's really hard to work if you don't have the right papers that allow you to do that. So, and then, of course, a lot of people speak English. If they know any European language, then, of course, it's English, because the British Empire was everywhere. So there's another reason that pushed people towards there, because it's easier for them to start a new life in a country where they already do know the language.
How difficult is it to gain, if one were to get entry into the UK, how difficult would it be to gain some sort of refugee status and become official in, if somebody wanted to?
Well, the problem is that according to the Dublin Convention, that is quite recent, it's like last 10 years, a person seeking asylum should seek asylum in the first country he come across. So if a migrant get caught anywhere in Europe, from Greece to Italy or France or Belgium, the police or the Home Office of the different countries can take their fingerprints. And there is a database where all these fingerprints are put. So if you are a migrant, you are stopped in Italy, they take your fingerprints, you decide to not claim asylum there and keep traveling towards England, then you will claim asylum in England. They're going to take your fingerprints and they're going to see that in the database you have been through Italy, and they're going to send you back to Italy for a law called safe third country. So if there is another third country that is not your home country, it's not the country where you are at the moment, but where you have been through and they have the evidence that you have been there because they have your fingerprints there, then they can send you back there. One of the things in Calais is between the people that have fingerprints taken somewhere, so they are aware that even if they make it to England, the only choice they have is not to make the authority aware of their presence in England. That means live an undocumented life there and means be exploited in whatever job they're going to have. And if the police catch them, then they're likely to be deported back to the country where the fingerprints have been taken. And who has clean hands, how the migrants say, so they don't have fingerprints taken, then they can claim asylum. And it really depends on the case. The UK is trying to become tougher and tougher on immigration issues, so they try to give refugee status as less as they can. There are other less relevant humanitarian kind of protection, so there is like leave to remain. There's something that is given quite easily, but it's only 3 years and most often it's not renewed. And that's, for example, something that the UK always or almost always grant to underage. So when someone mainly unaccompanied asylum seeker comes to the UK and they're like 16 years old, they get being given leave to remain, but that doesn't mean they have a refugee status. So when they turn 18, they can be deported back in the home country. In the UK, it's the only European country with indefinite detention. That means there is not a maximum length of time that an immigrant can be detained. So while, for example, in Italy is 18 months is the maximum, that is a long time, but still is the maximum time that a migrant can be detained before being deported or being released. In the UK, there is not a maximum length of time.
That's incredible. But that's the same kind of thing that happens, obviously, in the United States, too, which is prison crazy as a nation. Certain portions of the U.S. political establishment has been pushing to imprison undocumented immigrants under the accusation that by crossing the border, they broke a law, and therefore our criminals should serve a sentence and then be deported.
Well, according to European Convention and actually the Geneva Convention for Refugees, a refugee or an asylum seeker should not be charged for crossing illegally. But that doesn't mean that it actually apply, and people are detained if they are spotted, like if they cross, but they are spotted in Dover, they is deported on the other side. So Calais is deported in France and Dover is deported in the UK. If they get caught in Dover, then they are going to be sent straight away in the detention center. And then if they claim asylum, if they have any way to claim asylum, because if they have papers from Italy, for example, they cannot claim anything in the UK, they're just going to be deported back. And it's not supposed to be for crossing illegally, but for example, a lot of people during the eviction in Calais, that I guess we're going to talk about later, have been arrested and sent in detention center. And there is no charge because they were not even crossing, or they haven't been found crossing. They were just staying in Calais in the camp, and they got arrested. And then some of them released, some of them sent back to Italy, some of them have been released, but their papers have been taken by the police. So these people found themselves undocumented because the police released them from the detention center without giving them back their papers.
So in recent months, numerous social centers, camps, and squats around Calais were raided and evicted. You mentioned what happened to some of the people, but and what, some of the countries that they came from, but I guess, can you repeat?
I've been in Calais in the last 2 months, and there were two main evictions. The first one was the 28th of May. At that time, there were two camps. One was mainly of African, South Sub-Saharan Africans, and the other one was quite mixed between Afghans, Pakistani, Syrian, Egyptian. And the camps were evicted with the excuse of spreading scabies. So they say that was like they needed to evict the camps because it was unhealthy and was dangerous for the migrants and for the population in Calais. But the authority didn't say where these people were supposed to move. They came at the eviction with the police and three buses that were supposed to bring the migrants to take a shower. And that was their solution to scabies. They were supposed to bring the migrant to take a shower, give them a new blanket, new clothes, and then they just send them to find their way somewhere. And the migrants refused because, of course, they don't trust the authority. They don't trust someone that comes with the police and say, you're not going to be arrested. You're just going to be taken to take a shower. And only a couple of migrants decide to go. And they found themselves 150 kilometers from Calais. So the whole plan was to take them to take a shower as far as possible and then to like spread them around France. That's something that happened again when they were arrested after the eviction, the 2nd of July. They were spread all over France. And then even if released, they get released in really far away from Calais. So they had to find their way back to Calais. And in the days before the eviction, the migrants decided they wanted to move in another place. It's like the food distribution place, so it's where they get one meal per day by one association in Calais. So after the eviction, they all moved there, and the police tried to break in twice. It didn't work because the migrants tried to resist, and there were a lot of journalists and all the media were quite like present at the situation. So the police decided to kind of give up, and they said that the migrants had 2 days to leave the place. And still, they didn't say where they were supposed to move and to go. And we're talking about around 600, 800 migrants. It's really difficult to count, but yeah, that's mainly it. And so what the authorities say is that they had to find a place somewhere else and had to be in small groups. They wouldn't have accepted big camps. And they had to be outside the city. So the idea is small groups and as much as invisible as possible. And the migrants decide they didn't want to do that because they know how it works in Calais. They know that the police is really, really violent and it's quite dangerous to be outside any kind of visibility and be in small groups because, of course, it's harder to defend themselves. So they stayed in the food distribution place for over a month. There were people in hunger strike for more than 2 weeks claiming the authority to give them any kind of dignity in the life they were living in Calais. None of the authority came to talk with them. And then on the 2nd of July, there was the eviction of this place. And unfortunately, I wasn't there that day, but from the update I had when I came back a few days later, they break in tear-gazing people. There was a guy from Syria who literally got like burned in his throat, like his skin was burned.
From the direct heat from one of the canisters? Wow.
And so they break in really easily because they tear gas everybody. And once inside the place, they just took all the, let's say, white people that were like all the activists they could spot, but they could spot the activists just because they were like white. And so they took all the activists and the members of association outside the place. And from there on, they arrested all the migrants. So, of course, they brought outside the activists so that after 10 minutes, there is no more video and there is no more picture of what happened inside the place. And how I was saying, they arrested all the migrants that were there, so around 600, 700 migrants, and they brought them in different detention centers around France. And from there on, there's not been a camp, but people are spread all over the city. So some migrants live rough in the city or in the parks, and then there is the so-called jungles. They are like half an hour walking from the city, and it's like there is a football pitch and in the woods mainly, and people sleep there with tents or with just sleeping bags. But the police keep visiting them in the morning and sometimes just saying that it's really dangerous for the migrants to live there. That is quite ridiculous because they were living somewhere else and being pushed there just because they evicted the place where they were sleeping. And they say there is like a white dust that comes from a factory that could be dangerous for them. It could be true, but of course it's ridiculous has like this like excuse to make them move again somewhere else. And the jungle have been famous always because it's really far away, so it's really hard for activists to check on it. And so the police quite often goes really early in the morning to arrest people and sometimes just to destroy tents, sometimes to actually tear gas people. But on the 12th of July, there was a demonstration and then a new squad was opened. And is a really big place, and we don't know how long it's gonna last because, of course, the authorities are not really happy with a big squad hosting migrants. And but it was open the 12th of July, and there was a court hearing today, and don't know how long it's gonna last or not.
So the place is called Impasse des Salines, is that right?
Or
what does that mean?
Yeah. It's just the name of the street.
Okay.
And I don't know if people decide about the name.
And it's a former factory. And I think some of the support websites have listed it as being about 15,000 square meters.
When I first went there, they say 12,000 square meters. Yeah. There's a house that was probably like the guardian of the factory. And then there's like all the hangar. And then there's a huge like open space. It's not ideal because it's really far away from the parking where the migrants try to cross, for example. And but yeah, it's just like wanted to be a demonstration that something needs to be done because it's not possible to keep evicting all the camps and all the squad because the same day that the food distribution place was evicted, also other squad around the city were evicted, and that eviction is even more ridiculous than maybe the camp because the migrants who were staying in the squad were actually people who claim asylum in France, but they are not given any accommodation. So they're not allowed to work, because in Europe, if you're an asylum seeker, as long as your application is pending, you're not allowed to work. So you don't have any source of income, and the state should provide accommodation, but they often don't do it. So they were like sleeping in the squad, and the squad got evicted.
What sort of support are you seeing from outside the Calais area?
Well, the activists on the ground are from everywhere. Like, there is a lot of people from France and Belgium, of course, and a lot of people from the UK, but also people from Finland. And there was a guy, the first time I went to Calais, there was a guy from the United States. And so activists are from all over. And I don't know what that other kind of support people received there. I mean, there are associations based there. They give, like, blankets and tents and food. And they're, like, French associations. And Madison Dumont, for example.
I know last year in France, there were some pretty notable, large, far-right, like, French nationalist marches and demonstrations. So you've talked about how the immigrants and those in solidarity with the immigrants have been dealing with the police, but how have they come in contact with either white supremacists or French nationalists or what have you?
Yeah, there is a group in Calais, they call, the French word to say Save Calais, and they are far right. I don't want to call them activists, I would just call them fascists. And they are quite violent, and they're really violent with activists. So there were more than one case where activists from No Borders just walking down the street in the night have been, violently confronted with fascists. And the migrants are just really scared of going anywhere on their own. Like, for a personal example, one guy asked me to go with him to watch the football match for the World Cup, and I told him I couldn't go. He was like, well, then I'm not going, because I'm not going to go to a pub in Calais on my own, being clearly a migrant, because there are fascists around. Also, during the evictions, when the police evicted the camp, there were this group of fascists who came along just probably to enjoy what was going on. And yeah, they had also a Facebook page. I hope it's probably been shut down, because it was quite racist. I remember I read somewhere some time ago that the fascists were throwing stones in one of, like, towards the windows of one of the squads, and the police was there but was doing nothing. So I guess that even if they're not together, the police, like, turn a blind eye when that's the case.
What could someone contribute from across the Atlantic if they wanted to support this squat and the struggle in Calais and the struggle against borders there?
Well, I guess if people have time, energy, and a flight to Europe, then definitely come along in Calais. New people is always welcome. Also, because even if there is always new activists, there are some activists that are always on the ground, and they really need fresh people to, like, be really active when they might need a bit of rest. Is really overwhelming to be always in Calais. And otherwise, raise awareness about what goes on there. It's really important to try to maybe have links and find a way to send information around, also over the ocean, and then be aware of what goes on in the United States-Mexican border and be active there if it's easier. And fundraise and send money is always useful, because it's really easy to run out of any kind of material, because new people arrive every day and the police keep destroying all the tents and all the, like, sleeping bags. So, like, sleeping is a main issue in Calais, because there is not anywhere to sleep. And now it's summer, but still, like, the UK and the Calais weather is really bad, so people often sleep in wet ground and while it's raining, and yeah, everything is, like, needed there.
The immigrant situation in the United States, with this thing that's been hitting the news about all of the youth coming up from Central American countries and crossing the border and being detained, you know, by the hundreds, and many of them being sent home and processed without even an opportunity to sort of reach out for any, like, make a statement of refugee status or to speak with a lawyer. I assume, because you're doing No Border work, that you've read or heard about some of the stuff around immigration in the United States that's been coming up over the last month. Do you have any opinions? Or
I know that the United States is one of, like, there are two countries in all the world that didn't sign the Convention of the Right of the Child.
Oh, yeah.
Another, yeah, a really nice one. And yeah, I think it's only like the United States and another country in the whole world. So I guess there is much to do also there. Yeah. If you see, like, I don't know, there was something that came out quite often in Calais, like, mainly, like, for example, the Afghans were seeing the bigger picture and they were like, it's so unfair because the United States and England is in Afghanistan and they're bombing us, and then they complain and they treat us as animals if we come here, but we come here because they bomb our house. So I think it's, like, it's really unfair, but it's also getting worse and worse because while I was there for, like, when there was the first eviction was also the day of the European elections, and the far-right parties won in France and won in the United Kingdom. So, of course, every government is getting tougher, and Europe is really becoming, like, is already since a while, but it's becoming a fortress Europe where there are agreements between Italy and Libya to send back people when they're, like, spotted on the sea in international water. They're just, like, brought back to Libya without giving opportunity to claim asylum or, yeah, any kind of opportunity to claim anything. It's the same in the Spanish-Moroccan border. There's been people dying because the Spanish patrol was literally shooting people on boats. And, well, in Greece, European countries are not sending back people to Greece anymore. Also, if they have fingerprints in Greece, because there's such concerning human rights violation towards migrants that there's no way that the European countries can, like, legally send them back without, like, having to face the European Court of Human Rights. But I think Calais is quite surprising, and people don't know much about it because the people know about the borders, and Calais is not supposed to be a border because it's inside Europe. So it's not like the border of Fortress Europe is Europe, is like the heart of Europe. But being the UK is such a difficult border, and being outside the Schengen area, the impression I have is like it's impossible to cross because of the controls, and it's impossible to live in Calais. But that's part of the strategy. Like, they try to make the life of migrants in Calais as unlivable as possible so that migrants, like, just give up and stop trying or claim asylum somewhere else or just stay in France or move to Germany. It's like migrants think that UK is a better place to go, and they have kind of this illusion. But I think that what goes on in France is partially because the UK exert a lot of pressure on France to keep the migrants out of the UK. And that was the case till 2002 in Calais. There was a camp run by the Red Cross, and it was called Sangat. And that was shut down because of the pressure of the UK government on the French government. That was saying, like, you make, like, the life of these migrants in Calais is too easy, and they try to cross every night and you support them there, so just shut down the camp. And from there on has been all evictions, all, like, every spot the migrants decide to sleep in is not going to last for more than a few months.
It sounds like a lot of the migrants don't really, because of the way that you were talking about how they sleep, and at least when they're forced away from the cities proper, do they have much, like, interaction with the other people living in Calais, the people who have grown up here, maybe?
Well, I think the city is kind of divided between people who want to support the migrants, and there are really nice people, apart from the activists and apart from the people of the association. There are, like, really nice people that just host a couple of nights some migrants, let them take a shower, offer them a dinner. And then there are people that completely reject them. Like, during the demonstration, I was giving out flyers about why we were, like, demonstrating, and there were people refusing to take the flyers, like, completely refusing to have nothing to do with that. A lot of migrants say, like, how people in Europe are really weird because they love dogs, and they love dogs much more than human beings, because of course they sleep rough in the parks, and they see how people like go in the parks walking dogs, and they're like really nice with their dogs, and then they look at migrants as if they're like animals, even worse than animals, because they treat their animals really well.
Same thing here.
Yeah.
Whether it be like immigrants or just people that are houseless in the United States, it's pretty crazy. People spend so much. I've worked in health food stores, and people spend so much money on fancy foods for their dogs, and yet, you know, will call the police on someone for sleeping in a park. Yeah. It's incredible.
One day, we were. I was in the park. I was talking with the migrants, asking if the police came around, if they were alright, if they had minimum things they needed, and we saw there were some stands, and they were to raise awareness about homeless cats. And how unacceptable for society is to have like these poor cats that are not treated well. And it was like just so like out of place, because I like was just like completely the wrong place to do it, because there are like people sleeping in rough and homeless people, and they were like, oh, these poor cats in our like country is really unacceptable for us.
Well, the cats speak French. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, could I have been bit overwhelming, and it's really hard once you go there. It's really hard to keep your mind off it. It's like you keep being there also if you're not there anymore, and it was quite hard to come from England, apart from of course the privilege of having a passport and going and coming whenever you want, but also because I work with migrants here, so I know that it's not a paradise. And like one day I was trying to give them information, and I give them some numbers of association they can come if they manage to cross. And one of the things was like an association that take care of migrants detained in the detention center. And I saw the face of the migrants, they were completely shocked, and they asked me like why they should detain us. Like, and I was like, oh my God, they have no idea of how tough is the immigration process on the other side anyway. But, and I saw that partially because I think one of the reasons is because they arrive in Italy, they're not treated well, they move on to France and they're not treated well, so they kind of have to think that England has to be better because they invested so much time, so much energy, so much money, because all of them spend a lot of money to come, so they probably put in debts or their families, so it has to be better somehow, so they have to grab this idea. And then it's also because... because of what, like, the British Empire, like, they, I mean, we spread around the idea that the human rights are respected in Europe, and we go to Afghanistan and say, oh my God, that's a dictatorship, it's not like in Europe, and then they come and they see, like, yeah, well, nice.
Thank you very much. I know it must be late there, so I will let you go. But thanks a lot, Greta, for talking, and good luck.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Hey. Hello.
We are here with Bogdan. You were part of the organizing group of the fourth forum against unnecessary imposed mega projects that took place from the 8th to the 11th of May in Rosa Montana in Romania.
Yes, I was part of the group that took care of to organize this forum in Romania, in Rosa Montana. And yeah, I was in touch with the other groups and also took care of the logistics on the spot where we had the forum.
Okay, could you tell us something about the forum? What is this forum?
This is a forum that started 4 years ago. It happens every year in a different place of struggle in Europe, and it gathers people involved in all the big struggles around Europe and beyond. It started as a forum against big infrastructure projects in Europe, and during the fourth edition we introduced two more thematics, which is mining and fracking. Every year a new location is chosen, and during the third edition that happened in Stuttgart, it was decided that the next one will happen in Romania. So we took the initiative to organize it, and it went really nice.
Okay, before we talk more concretely about the forum in Romania, I would like to know, the forum is called Against Unnecessary Imposed Mega Projects. What means unnecessary and what means imposed?
I think that in all the big fights, these two words are really important, because most of the times the big projects that are proposed are just unnecessary because it just helps a few people, a few companies to make money, but actually doesn't really help the people in the areas that are affected by the project and is not also bringing any help on long term. So that's why is this word there in the name. And imposed because with the help of the authorities and the governments, they always try to make that these projects work. So they, in the end, try to impose them to the people, even if they don't want them to happen. And all these people that fight against, I think they just feel that it's imposed to them. So that's why they fight.
And what kind of projects are those? Can you name some examples?
Yeah, so as I said, it started as a big forum of the big infrastructure project struggles like against them. These are the high-speed train that's happening in Italy, train station in Stuttgart. And then it's the airport in Notre-Dame-des-Landes that they want to build. And also now we talk about the biggest open pit gold mine project that is proposed in Europe, in Romania. And fracking, which is a problem that now kind of appears everywhere in Europe. So this kind of project we talked about. It's also like from Morocco. It's also a high-speed train there. And there are problems with the forest in Turkey. All these kind of projects, I think they have what's similar to all of them is that they are unnecessary and imposed. So we tried to all get together and see how we can work together to stop them because we have similar problems, even if the projects are different.
You mentioned now projects in Morocco and Turkey. The third forum, as I read, was still called European Forum. Has this changed?
Yes, this changed. We decided not to include European anymore in the name of the forum, starting with the fourth edition, because there were always people invited from outside Europe. So we just kept it to the Forum Against Useless and Imposed Mega Projects. It's always the same problem everywhere, so European was useless in this case.
Okay, thank you. Then on the forum itself, did then participants from these social movements come and gather, or how was it organized internally?
There are organizations that are involved in organizing the forum in the past, or organizations that helped organizing the forum until now. So all these groups were invited. But also we tried to send the message that the forum is happening as far as possible. So we collected contacts of journalists, groups that are working on the mining issues, on fracking issues, especially on Eastern Europe. We tried to get people from there together. So we invited everybody and then people just subscribed, confirmed, and around 300 people were there. We did a program also together on the spot. It was a program proposed, but then everybody that participated could propose something. So a lot of different themes were discussed during the forum with all these groups.
Considering that the forum took place in Rosa Montagna, which is actually just a small village in nowhere in Romania, this seems like a really mammoth project, infrastructure challenge. How did you manage to do this?
Okay. In Rosa Montana, we, and then I say we, it's a group of people that were involved in doing other events in the past. Like we do a big festival every year exactly on that place and organize camps together there before. So for us, it was a little bit of challenge, but actually it's a self-organized camp. And in the end, everything went fine, even if it's on the top of the mountain. It was fine. There is an infrastructure group now that is forming in Romania. And this group helped a lot to build the camp. And then it was a kitchen collective that helped with the food, a vegan kitchen collective. Then it was easy. We just split the responsibilities and we did it. It was okay. It was not so hard to do it in the end.
Well, regarding the 300 participants and the different places where they came from, I would think that still the translation issue would be the worst nightmare. Yeah, was it a nightmare?
This was an issue always during the forum, and it was a point that took a lot of energy. We also had to translate the website in 6 languages, and this was kind of a challenge to do it in time all the time and make it like also the invitation and everything. We translated everything even in Arab language. So this was hard to do, but we managed to do it. And during the forum, of course, there were participants from all the countries. We had 5 different languages that people spoke during the forum, but we managed it because also we had the help of a newly formed interpretation and translation collective from Romania, and with the help of this group that has do-it-yourself equipment, and we also had a small help from a friend with some more equipment, we managed to ensure simultaneous interpretation in 2 locations in 5 languages during the whole forum. So this worked really good. Everybody was happy about this, and I think the level of discussions was much better because of that. We had professional interpreters, and they all came by volunteering to help the forum. So it worked really, really good in the end. We thought it's going to be hard, but in the end it was good, really good.
Well, this really sounds great. In any case, I heard there was some discomfort with the participation of political parties in the past in the forum. Was this an issue?
I didn't participate to the other 3 editions of the forum, but this edition, this subject was brought into discussion because, of course, the Save Roșia Muntană campaign always stand aside from the political parties, and we never got connected with the political parties in any way. So when during the forum one specific political party from Germany came and they tried to make some propaganda for their party, of course this was a problem for the local context. And then we raised this issue and we figured it out that actually it's a problem that it's from the past also, and it affects not just the Save Roșia Muntană campaign now, but on every time would affect other fights that are not connected with the political parties and that want to remain independent. So we had a plenary about this with everybody, and we talked about the involvement of political parties and political associations in the forum, and the decision at the end of this plenary was that from now on the political parties will not be allowed to participate in the forum. Like, people can participate on their own if they want, but not as a group, as a political party or association. So this, I think, from my point of view, was a big achievement of the forum and a step forward for what is going to happen from in the future. People were happy about this decision, and I think people didn't talk about it until now, and that's why there were problems maybe in the past, the same problems. So, yeah, I think through talking about these issues, because it's kind of obvious that if a political party affects certain struggle campaign, then it can't be together in the same gathering with other groups.
That's a great decision. But concerning the other contents of the forum, what was talked about concretely at the forum in Roșia Muntană?
So the program was structured on 3 plenaries on the 3 big thematics, like mining, fracking, and infrastructure projects. So there were these plenaries where the groups on a certain topic came together and they talked about issues, how they can work together from now on, what's the common things they do. And then there were workshops, like every group could propose a workshop on that field in these 3 thematics. But also there were groups that just came and on the spot proposed different workshops. Like, there were groups from Germany, it was a group from the Hambach Forest occupation, and even this kind of workshops took place, like not big struggles, but there were groups that came and presented what they do, and we learned a lot from each other. The main idea of the program was not to be too much, too many workshops, but more that people know each other, exchange a lot of information on how they work, on what they work on, and then to see what we can do together. And I think we got to this point that people talked a lot. It was also a nice atmosphere at the forum. So during lunch or during breaks, people were talking and exchanging ideas all the time. So I think from this point of view, it was a really success to exchange and get connected the groups between them.
it's like definitely more like a gathering of networking than it is an entity in itself that takes action in some way.
It is also an entity. Like, we had a message for the European elections also that was accepted in the forum, and we send it as the forum that gathers all the groups. And also it was a solidarity message for four people that were in prison at the time in Italy, in the NoTaf movement. So we also, as the forum, we send a message of solidarity to them. We want the forum to grow and not to be just a gathering every year. We want this to go through the whole year and see what we can do together in the meantime. So one decision that was taken during the forum is that we'll work together on a really good website that we all use together, and we use it as a tool from now on to have a voice, like united voice against different problems that will appear. I think it's not just a gathering and it's networking, but this is what we want to be, is to be on long term and to be not once every year, but during the whole year.
Does this website exist already?
No, until now, each group that organized the forum did their own website. Maybe it was not the most efficient way of doing it, but we learned. We understood that it's really hard to do it, especially to do it in so many languages. And then we found people at the forum that are good in making like the websites and really thinking a good platform that can work better. And then we decided not to a new website every year, but to work together to do one. And it's not done yet, it's work in process.
Regarding the struggles that were present at the forum, what was your impression? Are they going forward, or is this very different from country to country? What's the impression you got?
So in Stuttgart, it's an example that the things don't go perfect all the time, and the referendum was actually producing problems to the campaign because it just got the other opinion of the people, not the one that the campaign wanted. Yeah, not all the groups are getting to their goals, maybe. But we talked about all these issues there, and I think things will get better, I hope.
There's an interesting book that appeared in German in the last month on political mediation in respect to such projects, that the state tries to use mediation practices to pacify the conflict.
In the struggles?
In the struggles. For example, as happened in Stuttgart 21, with the mediation process that then cut the edge of the very radicalized movement that had been there before. Was this also a topic at the forum?
I didn't participate to any workshop like this, and I don't think it was brought into discussion. Maybe it's a good... it's something that we should check, because as this kind of problems came now, they will come again. And then it's good to know how to deal with these problems. During the forum, we had some discussions on the spot and then one plenary, but maybe it was not enough to really clarify everything. It was more like, okay, we can't have political parties here, and political parties can't get involved in some event in other parts also. So that's the thing, like, in your local context, you can do whatever you think is better for the campaign, but during the forum, which is, it gathers everybody, then it has to be fine for everybody. And then if one group would have problems by being connected in a way with political parties, then we can't accept them. But I think it's necessary, because in Stuttgart, I think they had problems for much longer, and they never talked about these issues. They didn't fix the situation, or they tried to, but they couldn't do it. And now, during the forum, it was an opportunity to bring up this discussion, and I think it solved, in a way, some issues also at local level, what happens in Stuttgart, and some things clarified between groups there.
Do you know when the next forum will take place and where?
It is not decided yet. There was some proposals during the closing plenary of the forum to happen in the Basque country or in Turkey, but this is a thing that we still need to decide, and other proposal might come, and then we will take a decision at the moment. But right now we don't know exactly where this will happen. It was not decided.
To get also an impression from the local struggle in Romania, what is the status now of the struggle in Roșia Montană?
Okay, so at the moment, the things are pretty fine in a way because there were the big protests last year in September, and everybody was in the streets against this law that was especially written for the Roccia Montana project. And right now, this law was rejected forever. And this is a great achievement of the civil society in Romania, I think. Also, it was another law that could have, and that law would have applied to other mining projects in Romania. And that was also rejected by the parliament. Some time ago, there were protests on the day of the vote. It was really sudden. And in the end, we managed to stop them. It was really like a small difference in votes, but we managed to do it because people mobilized. And right now, the situation is good. It's a big focus now on the patrimony of Roccia Montana, because that would be a thing that would save the place.
You mean to give it a status as nature patrimony, or what does it mean?
It is already a nature patrimony, and it's a very big heritage of Romania from cultural, historical point of view. The thing is that like one of the main goals of the Save Roccia Montana campaign is to have Roccia Montana in the UNESCO World Heritage. And now there are a lot of organizations that work on this and try to bring up the focus on the patrimony and to show that this is really a place that needs to be saved and that it's important and that can bring investments also for the area, and on long term would be much better for the local community to do the things in this way, like taking advantage of what's there already and not to destroy everything, and in 10 years to have a cyanide lake and mining tourism, as the company says. Now it's a big focus on that. There is an organization that is working on restoring houses, and they try to get funds for that, like heritage houses. And there is this organization, Europa Nostra. They put Roccia Montana on the list of the 7 most endangered areas in Europe. So now, also through this organization, they will bring funds and experts there to show how good that is, the potential of this area. It's kind of stable situation at the moment. There are not big protests anymore, but we keep on checking all the time what's happening in the legislative process, because there are 3 more laws that might affect the project in the way that it can legalize the project. Even if they don't have all the permits and everything they do at the moment is illegal, this is how we stop them until now, actually, in court, by attacking all the permits they get because they were illegally given. So the company is not in a good situation right now. They fired almost all the employees in the village, like 400 employees were just fired. And I think the community now starts to change again in a way that people understand that there's no chance for this project to start. And they start to do their own small businesses and like getting involved in tourism, learn how to do tours with the people, and opening their houses to host people or selling milk or things like this, which didn't happen before because they were dependent on the company. And now when everybody's fired, the things are changing, and it's much more quiet in Roccia Montana right now than it was before. It's better, I think. So we are on the good way, but we still have to watch them, because also with the help of the politicians we have, they are very pro this project, and it's gonna be hard to really stop them forever.
Is there anything else you would like to add that didn't come up in this interview yet?
On the Save Roccia Montana website and the website of the forum, there is the final declaration where all the big decisions were put. And I think that's the conclusion of the forum. So if people want to check more things, they should check this website. And that's all.
Then thank you for coming.
Thanks. Also, and I hope I answered all your questions.
This was our interview with Bogdan on the 4th Forum Against Unnecessary Imposed Megaprojects. The website mentioned at the end is rosiamontana.org. That's rosiamontana.org. There you'll just need to click on the banner with the white elephants in the right bar.
Asheville Free Media, AshevilleFM.org. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursa Goodness. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio.